From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Deep down, I know that's a trouble. Living underneath the weight, your chains, your strength, no straight up.
This is Siren Song from the Hanson Brothers' newest album, String Theory. And yes, we are talking about those Hanson brothers, the ones who, way back in 1997, exploded onto the music scene with their pop super hit, M-Bop. Well, in the two-plus decades since, the Grammy-nominated band has been very busy. They've released 6 studio albums, formed their own record label, brewed a beer, and most recently, collaborated with a full 46-piece orchestra. We'll talk more about that today, because this hour on Point, the Hanson brothers going strong. And you can join us. What is your favorite thing about Hanson? What questions do you have for the brothers about how they've gone their own way consistently throughout their careers, retaining their independence, their integrity, and their creativity? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And joining me now from New York are the Hanson brothers, Isaac Taylor and Zach Hanson. Welcome to you all.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. All right. Well, just since this is radio, can you give me an individual voice ID for each of you? So like, we'll start with Isaac. Hi, Isaac.
We'll start oldest. I am Isaac. Hello, hello. I play guitar sometimes.
This is Taylor. Yeah. And this is Zach. We sound somewhat similar being brothers, but, you know, there's a refined difference.
It helps on the harmonies, though.
Yeah. And I do think it actually sounds more that way because it's, you know, just kind of getting started, you know.
With our old age.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, you're just creeping into old age, indeed, right? And you're ripe old early 30s.
Yeah, yes. So, in the entertainment world, you know, that, you know, starts to be old age.
It does feel that way, though. We've been at this for a long time, and people will ask me, you know, I was 6 when we started the band. I was 11 when people first heard M-Bop, and sort of we broke onto the international scene as a band. And so it really feels like a lifetime. I mean, it's our entire life has been wrapped up in this idea of making music and sharing stories. And so, you know, in our own way, I feel like we get to feel a little old sometimes.
Because it's always been our art, though, I think that's part of why we know we've maintained our sanity.
You can claim having – I'll give you old souls, okay, if not old
thank you. Bodies. I'll take that.
So can we talk about your latest work, though, right? Because String Theory, your album, just came out just a couple of days ago. Really exciting. So give us the inspiration for it. Why did you want to do all these songs with a massive orchestra behind you?
Well, a little bit of history. I mean, celebrating 25 years as a band, we were there because we're always interested in the next thing. And really, that's always been our ethos. What's next? What's around the corner? And I think, you know, the people we look up to, the early rock and roll, soul music, songwriters, all did that, as well as great composers over history. And so I think bucket list items, one of them was to perform with a symphony, to record and work and do something that was really taking a transitional bridge between art, you know, contemporary music and craftsmanship and working with a symphony. And so we said, hey, this is the time to do it. This is the time to tell a story and to you know, ask our fans to come with us on a different journey. And also, it allowed us to sort of say, we can paint a picture that's broader and bigger and even more rich than anything else we've ever done, because we can, it's like having an arsenal. It's like you're going to battle with a tank and with, you know, rocket launchers. You've got all this power.
You've got a lot of different mood setters with all the different types of instruments, the strings, the horns, the woodwinds, all that stuff.
And also we found, you know, we set out to do this and we found the right collaborator. For years we'd known David Campbell, who's a great arranger and Academy Award winner.
A.K.A. Beck's dad, also.
And he was, you know, just somebody that was on our mind as the right person for the project. And so to be able to have him resonate with us and say, you know, I get it. I want to do this with you. We have, you know, a 90-minute piece to put together. So it was one of those things. We said, this is the right time to to take on this challenge.
Okay. So let's listen to a little bit from String Theory. And I'm going to start with the one where I'm going to start with Mbop, just because yeah. I can't tell whether or not you included this on the album just to sort of check the box and say, yep, this is definitely, you know, a major part of our history, or if there was a particular interesting challenge for you in putting Mbop to a string arrangement. But first, let's hear the 1997 smash hit. This is Hanson and Mbop. All right, part of Mbop there. Now, here is that song on Hanson's 2018 album, String Theory. Gentlemen, I'll tell you, it took me a couple of listens to this for me to come around, because the 97 version, of course, is so iconic, right, in pop music history. But I've decided mm-hmm. I really like hearing the lush strings behind you on this.
Well, I think we're glad.
We do too.
It's an interesting thing because, you know, that song, Mbop, really has become an iconic song of that era. And so whenever you're sort of reimagining that, you know, it will take people maybe a minute.
Yeah,
because it has such a strong impression in that time period. And that's part of the reason why when it did fit into the story we wanted to tell, it was conscious to really bring the strings forward and make sure you couldn't miss that element of the song. So the song is kind of melancholy,
yeah.
You know, the lyric. And so we wanted to bring that out a little bit without losing the spirit. There is a little levity in the song because it's saying, like, few things in life will last. You've got to find what really matters and hold on to that, because in an Mbop, it'll all be gone. C'est la vie, you know. And so you have that mix of these sort of lush sounds of the strings. The song is we're playing just acoustic guitar and some percussion, but mm-hmm. then you have this 46 musicians behind you adding the strings and the woodwinds and the timpanis and the.
You posed the question too, this is Taylor, that about why the decision to put it in the show, and whether it was like, hey, we got to check it off the box, or whether it had a reason. But what Zach's talking about is that the way we chose to approach the show, which kind of made it work for us, was to tell a story,
yeah.
And the story really Mbop fits into the story, because the story we sort of painted was. This idea of a character that starts with a small boy who has the impossible dream and sort of sees something in his future that others can't see, and immediately is sort of faced with the doubt, the natural, you know, inclination
the
of people around him to say, hey, that's not possible. And so he sets out on this knowing that he's up against challenges, but saying, I can't unsee the future I envision for myself. And sort of Mbop is right early in the show, and we also play it, you know, it's sort of a campfire song. It sounds, people kind of snicker that don't, you know, the song super well when you say it's Mbop's melancholy, because the song was sort of a campfire song originally. It was almost like a, you know, it's going to work out in spite of issues,
right.
Sort of a song.
Well, so,
you know,
can I just jump in here? Because this story that you're telling throughout String Theory, at least this beginning part that Mbop seems to epitomize, that's your story too, isn't it? I mean, that's originally what the song mm-hmm. was about, was you know, sort of
yeah.
responding to the naysayers that were looking at you when you were young boys and saying, why are you doing this kind of music?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would say that the story of String Theory in some sense is kind of loosely autobiographical, in the sense that we're certainly tracking the experiences that we've gone through in our lives and using our music to tell those kind of those phases of our story in our life through the songs that we've written. But I think it also, you know, it applies to a lot of people's experiences and a lot of people's lives, you know.
And I think what we've seen is, and to build on that, is what it is our story in many respects, because we have absolutely seen a dream and gone for it, and we've paid the price at certain levels, and we've seen success too. But we've also we're trying to bring our experience forward, because what we have experienced and we feel like is true and comes through in the show is that you can't tell someone to be someone else. And mm-hmm. and if you see that vision of your life, you have no choice but to pursue the option of pursuing something and ignoring that is to live a life of, you know, constant denial. But so once you see it, you take it on. And when you take on that quest, you're going to have highs, you're going to have lows, you're going to have burdens, but that's the journey that you're on. That's what, that makes the whole, destination that much greater once you get there.
And did you all have that vision or that same sort of sense of self from the start when you decided, again, as young boys to go into music as a career?
Well, I don't think you can say we knew so clearly what we know now, but I think, you don't end up, on a stage without sort of wanting to be there at the level that we were lucky and have been lucky to continue to do. I remember when we were just starting out, people would look at me at 11, they'd go, "So what do you want to do when you grow up?" And I'd be like, "Well, guys, I mean,
maybe this."
That was profoundly condescending.
I spent years of my life sort of pursuing something. You don't end up here by accident. You're not having an interview just by chance. And so I think that's, we did have a vision for the future, and it comes through, I think, in the music.
Yeah. Well, we are talking with Hanson, the Hanson brothers, Isaac, Taylor, and Zach. They join us today. Their latest album is called String Theory, 23 songs set to orchestral accompaniment. It's the latest of their works in a long and now rich and interesting career. We're going to talk about their independent record label, how they do their music, and also about beer. We'll talk about beer in a little bit. This is Sound of Light off of String Theory. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Don't go, don't tell me you're all right. There's no room for getting
uptight. Don't go saying that you're okay when you're lonely. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking with the Hanson brothers, Isaac, Taylor, and Zach. All join us. Their latest album is String Theory. It just dropped a couple of days ago, but you're listening right now to Lost Without Each Other. That's from their 2004 album, Underneath. And so, Isaac, Taylor, and Zach, I just want to ask you a quick question that Underneath sort of brings to mind, and that is, from the start, even though you were signed early on with Island, is that right? Island Records?
Well, it was originally Mercury Records that signed us in 1996.
Right, and then there was a lot of record label consolidation, and to say the least.
Yes.
In that moment, even though you were this young band, you had a huge album, you decided you emphasized or showed your sort of single-minded independence, I think, and that's one of the things that's defined your career. So can you tell us a story about why you ended up founding your own record label?
I think part of it at the root of all this is that I think we kind of always have felt a little bit like outsiders to some extent. We're young guys in a band. you know, trying to make rock and roll, pop music, whatever that is, our version of it growing up, listening to 50s, you know, rock and roll and R&B and having that really strong influence, and also not to mention Billy Joel and other songwriters mm-hmm. like that. But
as we're kind
of – yeah, but feeling like we were always a little bit like a fish out of water in a lot of cases. I think, you know, a lot of our kind of the pop music peers we didn't relate to, a lot of the people that we did relate to were a lot older than us, you know, and so on and so forth. And so you kind of constantly found yourself in this place of going, well, I guess I got to trust myself, got to trust my own path and my own gut, because at the end of the day, even though we're having a lot of success, there's also a lot of kind of question marks in the air that you're constantly dealing with. And so I think that independence came from the fact that we were kind of conditioned to, because of our life experience, feel like, well, we needed to just do it our way.
And also the facts of what occurred was we witnessed the largest music merger in history at the time that Polygram and Universal came together.
Yeah.
And that was somewhere in like 99.
At the time in 99, that was the biggest merger ever. And so we had a choice on that second record. Actually suffered immensely because our whole team just disappeared.
But everybody that signed us and was
so
responsible.
When it came to the third record, it was essentially a choice to say, we can stay in, we've seen the view from the top. We've actually already been there. We're standing on the top of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And the view's not, I mean, it's nice, but it's cold up here and we're alone, you know? And so I think we could see that we couldn't get it. If we were getting the best there was, because we actually were surrounded by a label that was spending our money that we were going to recoup, but you know, the way record deals work, you know, you recoup, you pay back the money to the label, and then, you know, then they still own it. But we just said, you know what, we can't suffer the reality of being in a huge machine that didn't actually sign us. The label that signed us is gone. So we just made a decision, really, that I think what you're pointing to, I appreciate your point of view of saying it, because I think what you're pointing to, it hasn't always been the easiest path, and it hasn't necessarily even been the popular path, but it has been consistent that we have chosen to choose our gut. And we say this to our fans last year, especially on the anniversary tour, we said, you know, we took a chance on you.
Yeah.
We took a chance on our audience, and we said we'd rather take a chance between us and our audience than a chance on a huge corporation that is maybe get bought again and sold again. And we don't know who's going to be with us. And so we knew that our fans were with us. And that's what inspired us to start the label.
So can I just...
I think you could say it a different way. You could say that labels are in search of commodities. And we're – the commodity that we're selling is a relationship with our fans, is the stories we tell as a band. And so that has led us down the path of always sort of being in control, because you can't be in connection with someone if you're not there leading the path with your vision and your words and your ideas.
Okay, so this is the perfect setup for the tape I'm about to play for you, because I do want to hear from you guys about the process and the lengths that you go to in order to care for and cultivate this relationship that you have with your fans. And, you know, and many of your fans have been with you for more than 25 years now. So just this weekend, On Point producer Miriam Wasser, she actually went to a String Theory concert, your String Theory concert that happened in Boston, and she talked to some of your fans about why they love Hanson.
Hi, my name is Lindsay. I'm 31 years old.
Hey, it's Anthony.
I'm Laura.
My name's Molly.
Hi, I'm Sasha St. Louis. I'm from Winterport, Maine.
It's my third Hanson concert. I'm excited for this orchestra.
My favorite thing about Hanson is that I get to share it with my daughter now.
I've been a fan since I was 12, so I'm living my 12-year-old best life tonight.
I love Hanson because their songs speak to my soul and they help me get through my chemo treatment.
I got into Hanson freshman year of high school with one of my best friends, and we go to concerts whenever they're in town, and we love them, and I'm so happy to be here with her, and we're so excited.
Those are some Hanson fans from a Boston String Theory concert this awesome. Weekend. So you hear right. like people. What I loved is the fan who said that she was a fan of yours since she's 12, bringing her 12-year-old best life, and the other woman who's saying right. she gets right. to share this with her daughter now.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I think that's something that I won't say that has happened on accident. I mean, we've always envisioned that our music should, music should appeal to people of many generations.
Hopefully.
I mean, when we were growing up listening to music from the 50s, that wasn't our generation's music. And so we've always seen what we do with that perspective of going, hey, people, kids, years from now can discover this and hopefully identify with it. And I think what you also hear in that group of people is there's this wide variety of experiences. People who are using music to get through chemotherapy, using music to cultivate relationships with their children, using music to hold on to relationships with their longtime friends. And like that variety of experience is something we really want to see. Like we encourage people to say, bring your friends, make this part of getting through your life. Like,
or at least we hope to see.
It's not,
exactly.
Good music, the bar we're trying to hit, is the kind of stuff that remains relevant.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to a little bit more of the music. Since we had played a track from Underneath, let's do another one here again. This is from the 2004 album Underneath. This is Strong Enough to Break.
Maybe you've taken a look at yourself.
Strong Enough to Break from Hanson, 2004, their album Underneath.
Yeah.
Let's go to Lauren, who's calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Lauren, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey there.
Hi, Lauren. How are you?
Hey,
what's on
I'm
your mind?
I'm good. I am recovering from Philly.
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's right, hopefully.
It's an amazing thing. I'm ready for New York. Going to be a drive, but I'm ready. And I always want to thank you guys for all the years of music and inspiration, helping me also bond with my four-year-old. She loves you guys has enjoyed the shows she's been to this year. And I wanted to know, how does it make you guys feel to know not only that you've saved so many of us, but that you've helped, like, shape us and shape our careers. Like, I'm in radio because of you guys and wanting to promote good music.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
How does that
feel? I mean, it feels a little bit scary sometimes when you realize you're having a really big impact on people. And there's a responsibility to that. I think we all kind of feel this responsibility as somebody who's been put on a pedestal at a level, and you go like, okay, we need to live up to this position. Like it's not something that simply exists because I'm great. It's something that somebody's been given me and a responsibility to kind of do right by it. I think you hear that in the messages in our songs. Like so many songs are about kind of coming across a situation or a struggle and kind of going, what do I do? You know, we heard Siren Call earlier, you know, in the show. Like,
we're strong enough to break.
Strong enough to break. What do I do with this situation? And I think you're trying to share a little perspective, a little hope, a little guidance, or at least a little camaraderie with the people listening going, hey, we're going through it too.
Well, and Lauren, I'll say you pointed to something that I think was really cool. And you, part of our deal is we do this because this is who we are. And one of the things that hopefully you hear, and you know, you followed us, you probably have heard this message already.
But, she's clearly been to more than one show before.
She's clearly been to a few, and you're going to New York. You're traveling. It's amazing. Is we've always tried to say, you know, we're seeking something, and the song might even, like, Strong Enough to Break, like, you hear that song, it might be saying, you know, sound upbeat, but what it's really saying is I'm strong enough to fall apart and to put myself back together again. And so the answer I would say is we're honored that the pursuit we feel called to do, which is to write songs and to share things, is something that has the ability to connect with people
and have value.
And have value. I mean, that's really, I mean, because this is who we are. This is what we, this is who we have to, this
we're not qualified
to
do anything else.
This is our path. So.
Well, so when you say you're seeking something, is, you're seeking to do what though? I mean, I'm not.
Well, that's a really, what's the answer? I think to be something to encourage people. I mean, I think music is, you know, there's a, you play the song Sound of Light, you know, searching for the sound of light. There is light and there's dark. And you know, people can take that spiritually. They can take it physically. Literally. They can take it literally. They can take experiences they have. And we have always had a strong sense of purpose that not that every song is about all kinds of things. It's about your experiences, but there's a choice to wake up every day and put something in that does actually lift people up. And I think you can,
in spite of adversity, yeah, is most important.
So I think if anything, it's that continual seeking. And you know, the first song on this show is called Reaching for the Sky. And it's not just like about the boy that wants to be an astronaut, you know. He maybe literally wants to be one, but it's the idea that each of us have something in us that is innate to our, you know, to who we are. And so
every life has value. Every person who lives has the opportunity to do something no one else can do. If nothing else, love people in their family better.
Their neighborhood, you know.
In their neighborhood.
I think at risk of adding too much, I think it's also about setting a standard and saying it's okay for life to be a little bit hard. It's okay for these relationships to be, you know, it's okay for you to reach for something really big and fail at it. I think people need to hear that. Like, it's okay to fail at it because it's worth trying. I think so much of our career has been us trying to sort of live up to our own potential that we see in ourselves.
Well, let's go to, we've got so many callers who want to talk with you guys. So, like, I'm just going to almost
hand it. We're going to try and be more swift.
I'm going to hand it over to them. So let's just go to Crystal, who's calling from Hammond, Indiana. You're on the air, Crystal.
Hi.
Hi, Crystal.
How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Good. I saw you guys last Monday in Chicago.
Awesome.
And it was amazing, as always.
Thank you.
So my question is, like, with the orchestra and all of it coming together, like, I'm a musician, so, like, I get, like, coordinating, like, five people on stage, right, at the most, and how much practice goes into that, and how much work goes into kind of being together and following each other and listening to each other, and it was so incredible to see, you know, the three of you and then the conductor and this entire orchestra, and I'm, like, the whole time I'm trying to figure out, like, okay, who's leading the way here? Like, how did that all, like, come together? Was it, like, did you have practice time? Like what's the secret here?
Crystal, well, thank you for your
call. Crystal, thank you so much. Perfect. I'll give a technical answer, and then the guys can add if they want to add creativity to it. One of it is, you're right, part of the thing about putting on a symphony show is there's logistics involved. You're talking about literally 10 times the amount of people that usually – there's five of us usually with a bass player and another guy that plays guitar and keys with us for years. But this is now 50 people or 60 even. Yeah. So one, it comes down to the charts. And so we worked with an incredible collaborator with David Campbell. So the way the charts are written – are actually, you know, it's writing them well. It's kind of writing them so that there's the nuance is there, and then there's also clarity, and then also a good we show up and work with a different symphony when we perform it in every city, but we're working with a common conductor in several cases. A conductor from California named Noah Luna has been with us, but most of the time we're walking in working with the symphony. We walk in and we get one rehearsal.
Yeah. So that's the hardest part. Is we're literally doing the show twice in a day. So I
mean,
in its entirety,
it's really a testament to the great musicianship of the classical musicians that we are able to work with on stage, because they really can sit down and look at what you've written, and with a little guidance from the conductor, they can play it for the most part exactly the way it's intended.
We can play it because we wrote it and we've rehearsed it for the last 2.5 years.
Was there any? Can I just jump in? Was there any song that you wanted to do that you turned out you didn't like it with a classical arrangement?
There are lots of songs that really didn't make the show. Probably the hardest part about this project was deciding how to cut songs, because when we said, let's do a symphony album, we didn't exactly know how. And so there's lots of ways you can say pick songs because they're your most successful songs, or pick songs because they have arrangements in them. And the only way we could kind of get happy with cutting songs was to say, let's tell a story. And the story really let us go, what's the lyrics say? What's the actual message behind the song?
What's the tone, the emotional mood that's
being
said?
I think there's a great song off our last album called Juliet, which has this amazing string line that is a part of the song. And cutting that, like, I couldn't get happy until I realized, like, well, we don't really want a love song right in the middle of this show. Yeah. We want a song about fighting for what you believe in or something like that.
Yeah, well, we've just got to take a quick break here. We'll be back in a minute with a lot more from the Hanson Brothers. Isaac, Taylor, and Zach join us. Their latest album is called String Theory. It was just released on Friday. It's more than 20 songs from Hanson with orchestral accompaniment. We're going to go into the break here with Thinking About Something. This is from their 2010 album, Shout It Out. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. You're listening to Tragic Symphony. That's a track off the 2013 album Anthem. And that album is, of course, by the Hanson Brothers. They join us this hour. Isaac, Taylor, and Zach are with us. Their latest album is called String Theory. It's just out a couple of days ago. It's more than 20 tracks set to orchestral accompaniment, the latest in their long career of independence and innovation, I'd say, in music, both as musicians and as businessmen. Guys, I'm wondering if I could just read a quote to you from the Washington Post. Jeff Edgers wrote about you not that long ago, and he was talking about how, you know, part of the reason why he sees you all as not having followed the same self-destructive path, if I could put it that way, of some other, you know, childhood stars. He said that, this is what he said. He said, the answer for Hanson has been to pull back, compartmentalize, and keep some spaces for themselves. Consider their approach to faith, one of the more polarizing subjects in modern culture and certainly pop music. We haven't talked about your faith here yet this hour. I was just wondering if you could respond to what Jeff said and how faith works in your life today.
Well, I mean, I think faith is a huge part of who we are. I mean, those who look at our music probably see a lot of what we think about the world in it. But I think it's been really important to us to not make that the subject of who we are in the world and let people discover that. If you want to know more about me, come talk to me. Come to a show and ask me a question. But we're not going to stand on stage and sort of give speeches about how people should live their lives. We're going to just share our perspective on the world through our music and how we treat people and how we treat each other.
I think it's maybe the other way to say it is it's more important what I do than it is what I say.
and that should ripple out. Yeah. And that, you know, we talked about music is we say, what's your purpose or you know, the sense of purpose to put something good into the world, something that lifts people up. And I think, you know, certainly our, you know, how we've grown up and each of our faith is at the heart of that sense of inherent value in, you know, in everybody.
Yeah.
You know, that we have, you know, we're all here for a reason.
Well,
I actually think in more cases, Sorry, I think in more cases than not, actually, I think faith actually brings people together, not pulls them apart.
Yeah.
Because
it should.
Well, I was wondering if you could all tell me a little bit more about how you think you avoided the pitfalls of superstardom as young kids. Because after Middle of Nowhere came out, I mean, just feels like the blink of an eye later, you were on Saturday Night Live, right. Oprah. I mean, you were touring around the world. You were on the top of the Billboard charts. I mean, that's a lot for young people to take on board.
Well, yeah. No, I think you're right. It is a challenge no matter what generation you are from. I think people want to make some distinctions about the current era with social media and how it's so much harder or easier or this or that. But it's just hard to be really successful at something because you do become a target for a lot of people's their desires, their aspirations.
And their anger or something.
Their own shortfalls. But I think for us, probably the biggest thing is every bit of success we've had, we really get to tell our stories. And so as the composers, as the writers of our music, we're able to sort of sit comfortably in understanding we're telling our life story. And even if it goes away right now, if we all become accountants or, you know, carpenters or whatever.
You wouldn't want us as accountants.
Yeah, no. Then, we still it's something we're proud of. We don't have to sort of second guess it or reimagine it in a way that sort of changes. Oh, that's not me, because it's always been our story.
Okay. Well, we've got lots of callers who want to ask you some questions of their own. So let's go to Bobby, who is calling from New Orleans. Bobby, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
No worries. Hi, Bobby.
Hi. Oh, my goodness. I was curious. it's just a lot. I grew up with a brother who was a musician, and he's great. I love him. And 90% of the time, I wanted to murder him. And I did not have a business or a band with him. So I've been wondering for 20 years how you guys have kind of managed the balance between the kind of inevitability of sibling rivalry and living in close quarters and being, you know, able to get on each other's nerves versus being in this band and this business together for so long without animosity, at least that I've seen from y'all.
Well, she's been waiting 20 years for this answer, guys.
Well, the short answer is there is another couple Hanson brothers. We actually murdered them. Yes. We got that out of our system. They're gone.
Don't joke. We do have a fourth brother.
We have a fourth brother, yes.
Probably two things that can be said. One, if we had that much animosity, we probably wouldn't have been a band. We do get along mostly well. And I think probably the biggest thing about us is our personalities are different enough that we naturally staked our claim to certain areas of the relationship. You know, like one guy really needs to share his mind and share big ideas. The other guy just doesn't care.
But there have to have been bumps in the road, though.
Well, there are.
There are bumps in the road every single day.
The thing I would say is you know, when you meet someone that's had a 40-year marriage, do you think to yourself, wow, it's amazing. You guys are still together. It must be easy. No, you don't. You recognize that a marriage for 40 years means, wow, somehow you cut through the things.
You figured out how to compromise.
In order to keep that marriage. And I think that's really the comparison. And now, so I've been married now for a lot of years, over 16 years. And I got married young, obviously. But I say now more than ever, congratulate somebody that has kept something, a business, a relationship, very long, because if it's working still, then they've actually have struggled and they've gotten through the struggle. So
can I say it slightly different way?
Sure.
Fighting is okay, right?
100%.
We fight. I like to say we fight three times a day, every time we eat, every time we do anything. We're always fighting over things. But I think the main thing is understanding that you can fight over a lot of things without having to sort of demoralize the other person, without having to sort of like cut their character. Like, you're just a terrible human because you think differently. And so that's probably as a whole, the way we fight is more over things. Oh, I want to do this project. I want that song. I want to change this thing about the way we're running our business. But not over like, hey, Isaac, by the way, I hate you. You're a terrible human, and I hope you die.
Well, exactly. So this leads us to a portion of this conversation that I wanted to get to you, with you guys, and that is sort of where you are in your lives right now with your own families. Because even in terms of the folks who are sending us messages over social media, there's a repeated theme here about your long-term fans now taking their own kids to see you. For example, Kelsey Chin is writing, "My kids are now joining me at shows, and it's so great to share music with them. My son's Christmas wish is to get the sheet music and learn to play String Theory on his violin." That's just one of several such comments we've got. Now, on that point, I want to play a track from 2017. This is a single. It's called "I Was Born." So let's listen to that. That was "I Was Born" from 2017 and Hanson. And the reason why I wanted to play this track, guys, is because your kids are in the music video for this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they are.
So how has fatherhood changed, or has it changed sort of how you do and what you do and how you think about living your lives?
Well, I mean, for one, we grew up in a big family. So, I mean, kids were always around. But I think... more than anything, we see one more reason to sort of seek, you know, the next dream and the next idea within your kids, because they're looking at you, and you want to set an example. You want them to see their own lives and say, "Hey, I can, you know, live up to this possibility. I don't have to settle. I can, you know, if I work hard," because they see us work hard. We're entrepreneurs, really. And I think they see. I know with my kids, I mean, we talk about it all the time, like, hey, anytime we get to do something extraordinary, anytime you get to see me, you know, whether we're on TV or we're traveling to a cool place or you're going to experience something, remember, like, I'm doing the pre-work on that when I get up early and leave late and you don't see me. I mean, all that stuff that many people do in other professions. So I think it affirms that. And that song is in the String Theory show as well as last year's album.
I think it's actually one of my favorites in the String Theory show because of how triumphant
I think we should talk just for a minute. I mean, the reason our kids are in the music video because the song is so kind of unabashed. It sort of saying, "I was born to be something no one's ever been." It's a message I think that we can identify so deeply with when we're actually kids and the way that kids look at the world. And so we were thinking of casting kids, and then we looked around and like, Taylor has five children. I have four. Isaac has three. Like, why don't we just use our own kids? Because it's this cool reflection on us, I think, when you actually see like my son, my 10-year-old on the drums, and then me on the drums. There's this cool picture of seeing things come to fruition. There's no better way to express that message than through seeing a child sing it.
Let's go to Tyler, who's calling from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Tyler, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. First,
thanks so much.
A huge thank you to the Hanson Brothers. It's super fun to share a city with you guys.
Right, you're calling from our hometown.
Yeah.
That's right. It's snowing today. I don't know if you guys are here.
yeah, we got some messages about snowballs and so on.
Good deal. Sweet. Yeah. So I work for a local nonprofit here in town called City Lights Foundation. And I just was hoping you guys could talk a little bit about how you've used your influence in Tulsa to really bring some highlights to some of the issues facing our city, like food deserts. I know, Taylor, you've worked a little bit on that. And I was hoping you guys could share that with a more national audience.
Sure. Right. Yeah. I mean, cool question. We love our city, and it's part of our story. You know, on deciding to be from Tulsa and build our business there.
Well, staying there is really the way.
And saying, well, yeah. I mean, just saying, hey, we're not just going to be here and live here and pay our taxes. We want to be a part of it. So, a few years ago, I was really inspired by a former U.S. ambassador that had some roots in Oklahoma, and his leadership really kind of inspired me to say, well, what can we be doing to heal wounds in Tulsa? And so we went on a quest to I particularly went on a quest to learn more about hunger issues in Tulsa and really uncovered a reality which is true for a lot of families, which is food deserts. And, you know, you have hunger, which people like picture somebody just not eating. But food deserts is really a condition of a declining neighborhood and just it's economics, you know. And so we built a really cool deal with just amazing partners, food bank, the health department, many food trucks, and we do pop-up events. In fact, there's an event tomorrow in Tulsa. If you guys want to go to foodonthemoveok.com, you can go to it tomorrow and on Thursday. So we do these great Food on the Move events that are pay-as-you-can, and it's meant to stimulate connection between community and long-term change in the neighborhood to bring back reinvestment. So, you know, meet people where they are and then hopefully build a long-term change. But, you know, really it's just about stepping forward. And we talked about our vision for music. I think anything we've done in Tulsa, anything for me, the passion is to see people come together and that, you know, 1 + 1 = 3. I mean, you all of a sudden have those events where you have these two things separately that together are greater.
Well, I wanted to see.
I think there's no.
Do you mind if I just, because we've got just a couple minutes left and there's just
sorry,
one more.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I got on a soapbox there.
No, it's a good soapbox to be on, but you got so many fans who have been, you know, jamming our phone lines. There's one more at least I wanted to see if I can get to. So Kristen is calling from Indianapolis. Kristen, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hey,
well, speaking
Kristen,
of generosity, I happen to have won a meet and greet in Chicago just recently at your String Theory show, and I don't think a lot of people really understand how generous and kind you have been to your fans throughout the year. Wonderful to hear about all of the work with Tulsa.
Hey, Kristen, so you're going to have to forgive me for jumping in on you. I'm really sorry, but your phone was a little hard to understand, but through the magic of radio, my producers tell me that you wanted to talk about how generous the Hanson brothers have been to their fans and how they might draw boundaries, too. Guys, we've only got a minute and a half left, but how do you want to respond to Kristen?
Well, I think, you know, there's an interesting thing between the boundaries you're talking about, the public life and the private life. But I think, you know, when we're on stage, like, we're sharing something. And when we're writing a song, we're sharing something about who we are. And that's not the same thing as inviting you to our house. But if you're coming out to see us at a show, we like to say hello. We like to hear your stories. Because
you're coming to work.
We want the music to have a personal impact on you.
Yeah.
So in the last minute that we have, what you've done so much. What's next?
Oh, well, great question.
I think at the heart of String Theory and every project, we've made things that we're really proud of, and we've invited people to join us on that. And I think we're seeing that telling a story is more important than ever, and not just in each song, but in the whole project. So I think we'll be seeking things that are even just like String Theory is some exciting and surprising to see. Hey, with a symphony, I think we're looking to challenge ourselves in new ways and really to invest in the audience and the people that are calling.
Oh, yeah. And then this tour and this album, we'll take it to Australia next year and Europe next year and kind of go to a lot of amazing places with it. So we're also on a journey.
A lot more still on String Theory. Yeah.
Well, Isaac Taylor and Zach Hanson, their latest album, as I mentioned, is String Theory, just out a couple of days ago. They're on this enormous tour, String Theory Tour, where they play these songs, 20-plus songs, with live orchestral accompaniment. We've got information about that at onpointradio.org. Gentlemen, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you this hour. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And we'll close out this hour with No Rest for the Weary from the 2018 album String Theory. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Yesterday was just fine, the future's all I got time.